Hey there, welcome to Takeaway with Sam Okus, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief here at NRN, and this is the show where I give you an all-access pass to the restaurant industry's most influential decision makers. This week, I'm talking with Susan Taylor and Noah Burgess, the CEO and director of R&D for Juice It Up, a Southern California-based smoothie, juice, and bowl concept with about 90 locations in four states. Juice It Up was one of the originators of this booming category of juice concepts that are introducing the U.S. to a wide range of superfood and functional ingredients. And Susan and Noah joined the podcast to talk about how the concept is making both a business and a menu case for these unique ingredients while meeting the needs of their customers and their franchisees. In this conversation, you will learn more about why you should watch other categories for innovation opportunities, how TikTok is introducing the world to new foods and flavors, and why your most loyal customers are the perfect focus group. Jumping now into my interview with Juice It Up's Susan Taylor and Noah Burgess. Also, don't forget to stick around after the interview as I will share my five takeaways from this discussion, actionable insights that you can take with you on the go. Okay, I'm here with Susan Taylor and Noah Burgess, the CEO and Director of Research and Development, respectively, for Juice It Up, Southern California-based smoothie, juice, and bowl concept. Whew, that's a mouthful. But guys, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I appreciate it. So we're going to talk about menu innovation. We're going to talk about Juice It Up's expansion plans and really the intersection of these two things, because I think it's really fascinating. And, you know, of course, these days, menu innovation is so crucial to driving your existing customers back to the restaurants, but also, of course, to attracting new customers. Before we dive into that, though, I'd love for each of you to introduce yourselves and a little bit more about your background. Susan, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to Juice It Up.
Sure. So I've spent my entire career in the hospitality restaurant space. First job I ever had was at McDonald's. So I've always enjoyed just working in restaurants. Did it all the way through college, and then after I graduated, I kind of got sucked in and never left the space. I grew up in full service and had an opportunity with a concept to move across the country to open new markets and do a lot of restaurant openings. Spent time at the front of the house, the back of the house. Worked in some fast casual brands, and then the past 20 years within the juice smoothie bowl space with a competitor for about 14 years. And then I've been here with Juice It Up for almost 5 years. It'll be 5 years in September. So I love food. I love the creativity. I love the teamwork aspect of it, you know, working through a shift or working with others. And just the satisfaction, the ability to see the immediate satisfaction of guests when they get a great product.
Sure. Yeah, this is a good industry to make a home in. So you've done good for doing that, for sure. Noah, tell us about yourself and how you got to Juice It Up.
Yeah, so I have my degree in food science. I actually grew up on a coffee farm in Hawaii. So this was a great fit. This is going on my 12th year at Juice It Up. Leaning back on my experience growing up in Hawaii with those flavors, with most of the products that we use actually growing in my yard. So this is actually a perfect fit. And yeah, I've loved every month, day, year that I've been at Juice It Up. It's been a great fit for myself and the brand.
Well, you're a lucky guy. So you've grown up with these flavors. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense that you're in the position you're in. Okay, so Noah, I guess starting with you, how do you describe the Juice It Up menu? Because as we've all said now, you know, juices, smoothies, bowls, we know this is a category that's really taken off in the last half decade to a decade or so. Right. But how would you describe the Juice It Up menu? And in particular, how would you describe how it is different maybe from some of your competitors?
Yeah, I would say we appeal to everyone. We kind of really don't corner our market. We have, you know, our fresh raw juices made to order, shots as well. We have our classic smoothies, which are standard strawberry banana smoothie. We have some innovative flavors there, like a chili lime mango, Mango Mania, which is just your classic mango. We have an evergreen that includes spinach and kale. So those are more for our younger audience or someone that just wants a healthier treat. And then we have our protein smoothies. So for someone that gym goer, or, you know, someone that's just trying to bulk up, or, you know, wants to incorporate more protein into their diet. And then we have our plant-based smoothies as well. So that's all raw fruits and vegetables, different from our raw juices, that these are all blended together. So you still get that fiber-rich smoothie. And then we move on to our single fruit bowls. So everything from acai, dragon fruit, spirulina. And we also have the option to turn any one of our classic smoothies into a bowl, so that you're getting more of like a full-on meal replacement rather than something that would be kind of a treat or something on the go. So I like to say our menu appeals to everybody, whether you just want a nice treat or you're looking for something to supplement a healthier lifestyle.
Okay, I got to ask the stupid question. Aren't they all plant-based? You say plant-based. Tell me more.
So we do have hard packs. So we do have sherbets and non-fat yogurts that we include into our classic and some of our protein smoothies as well. So
got it. Yeah,
that would be...
So that would be more non-dairy, essentially.
Right.
So Susan, you know, you talk about being in this industry for 20 years. I mean, Juice It Up's been around for a long time. And, you know, I mentioned that this category has been taking off 5 to 10 years. And I think that's true, which is to say, like, outside of California, I think this became more of a trend nationally over the past decade or so, whereas this has really existed. Noah, you had this in Hawaii. I mean, this has been around in parts of the country where these fruits and vegetables grow all along. But if you were to look back, Susan, on the 20 years being in this category, how do you think it's evolved? Like, how do you think this category has really changed along with consumer demands and preferences?
Well, I think the there's a few things. One, I think the way that the consumer uses it now versus 20 years ago has evolved, where it's become much more commonplace that folks are incorporating a smoothie or a raw juice or having an acai bowl in their, you know, their regular meal plans. You know, 20 years ago, you had a lot of folks that were either they wanted to lose a little bit of weight because they wanted to go to their high school reunion, or they, you know, were working out a lot and wanted to have something to be able to kind of replenish after they worked out. And I think that, as I said, I think consumers today are much more aware of what they put in their bodies, of how they feed themselves, what's important as far as nutrition and just a healthier lifestyle. And I think, you know, you see it within a lot of categories within the restaurant, you know, segment. So I think it's, you know, consumers are just really aware of that. The other part of it is I think we've become more, you know, global in what's accepting as far as flavors or what things are, you know, are out there that people can try and that they can incorporate into their lifestyle. And I think that's where you start seeing a lot of innovation or forward thinking on, you know, what are people going to be asking for? What are things that we can look at to incorporate into our menu or perhaps bring in for people to try that, you know, maybe right now not a lot of people think about, but in 5 years could be something that is, you know, you see everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So taking all of that into account, I want to get kind of into the nitty gritty on the R&D process, Noah. And, you know, considering all that Susan just said and how people are paying more attention to what goes into their body, I imagine too, you know, this, when Juice It Up was early along, it was probably more of a niche category for a specific type of customer. Now it's just more mainstream, more universal. How does this drive your thought process for R&D? How do you take into account the fact that you probably have a wider variety of customers looking to Juice It Up now for your menu, right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely from 12 years ago to now. You know, I remember one of my first projects I worked on was a turmeric smoothie, and our customer at that time just wasn't ready for it. Reintroduced it 3 years later and it took off like wildfire. So, I think our consumers are more educated, not on just health and wellness, but on just, like, to Sue's point, global flavors. You know, some of the stuff I grew up with, I'm starting to see pop up here in California or Texas or New Mexico. Or Oregon, some of our other markets where we have stores. So yeah, it's definitely opened up my playbook a lot, which is nice because I can lean on what I grew up with. Also, going out into the market is always just super important. I think not only just our direct competitors, but just going to different restaurants and seeing just the ton of plethora of different things that are popping up on menus or things that you're not seeing as much as you would before. So, you know, having your, you know, hand on the pulse of what's going on in different markets, whether it's a different restaurant or a bar or mocktails or any of those types of things, I think is super important. And then another thing too is leveraging your suppliers. Your suppliers are seeing what's going on as well and using what their data is seeing, or, you know, what their flavors introducing, you know. So I think all of those things, and the most important too is listening to our customer. We love to leverage our loyalty program to reach out to our customer base to see, hey, what do you guys want? What do you, you know, want to continue to see, or what are you not really interested in anymore? Is huge. So yeah, combining all those things to come to a conceptualization is super important for me. It's leveraging all those different levers to come up with the concept. And then after that, you know, you start the bench top and consumer testing and all that other good stuff. So yeah.
A lot of interesting things you just said there, but I want to start with exploring this topic of like global flavors, for example. So as customers become more interested in and adventurous, you know, with the things that they're eating, you know, you do still have, you're still constricted by what your menu platforms are, smoothies, juices, and bowls. So I imagine you're not looking at gochujang if you want to explore global flavors, because it doesn't fit there. But considering that, you say, okay, customers are more interested in global flavors. They're more adventurous. What does that mean for a smoothie and juice brand? How do you start to play with that, Noah?
Yeah, so I think it's, you have to work within your means, right? So like you said, I'm not going to be working with gochujang, but a few years ago, you know, horchata was a very popular item, especially in Southern California. And it's like, okay, what can I use in my own pantry to do a spin on our own horchata, which we did, which is taken off. And then we've done line extensions on that horchata. So we did a strawberry horchata, peanut butter horchata, cold horchata. So you just start kind of building off of that, but you have to still, what can I do within my own restaurant without adding too much SKUs to our pantry list, because then you start to get a little crazy, and we're in QSR. So we have to make, you know, products consistent and quick and easy to make for our employees. So, you know, you can't add like 20 things into one LTO. You know, you try to stick to one or two new ingredients and then incorporate, you know, I've been working with the whole pantry list for a long time now, but it's being creative within your own walls and what you're teams are able to execute in a timely and consistent manner.
Yeah, and obviously there's a supply factor here. And Susan, going to you, I mean, thinking about supply chain, obviously the work that Noah's doing is exciting and fun, and obviously really responding to consumer demand, and ultimately is your number one way of getting customers and keeping customers. But Susan, as the head of this brand, I mean, you obviously have to think of profitability, and you have to think of costs and making sure that the supply chain costs aren't getting out of control. And so I guess I'm just wondering, Susan, from your sake, you know, how does Juice It Up really manage to balance innovation with responsible business practices? How do you ensure profitability while using some supply that I imagine must run toward the more?
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, during certainly supply chain, the challenges have changed over the past few years. I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, you know, it was just availability. Now, you know, sourcing, you know, a lot of ingredients come from different parts of the world. And, you know, there have been changes in the weather, or, you know, just the ways that things get transported from one part of the world to another that, cause some challenges on that. But I think for us, and Noah spoke about it, you know, we really try to look at what do we have within our own pantry right now, or the ingredients that we use, that we can use as we innovate within that. And if there are different items that we're bringing in specifically, yes, we look at everything that we do through the lens of, you know, is it what our consumers are ultimately going to want to ask for? On the back end, is it profitable? Is it easy to execute? And what's the return on investment for our franchisees? Because they're ultimately our customers. So anything that we bring to them and ask them to make the investment in buying the product, training their team, you know, putting up the menu board panel that advertises that product, it has to have a return on investment for them. So, you know, we do have some guardrails of, you know, we can look at some different things and say that might be interesting to do, but ultimately, what's the cost on that? Is it going to be profitable for our owners? And is it, you know, again, is it something that our guests want? I've been involved where, you know, we brought in something that we thought the guests absolutely would want because that's what we internally thought that they wanted, and it didn't sell. And then, you know, you have franchisees asking, why did we bring this in if we weren't going to sell it? And then, you know, there are others that we bring in that's absolutely what the guests want. And the franchisees, the horchata that Noah referenced, that was done as an LTO. Was it 3 years ago? No, or 2 years ago? 3 years ago. Three. And it's at a point now where, you know, we go through and we look at our menu on a yearly basis, and there's some that will fall off. And then a lot of what we do as far as innovation and LTOs will come on. And that's one that we most commonly get requested to put on the menu. It's been a fourth quarter favorite for the past 2 or 3 years, but it's almost earned its place on the permanent.
Interesting. You mentioned, I mean, you're a franchise, and Noah had mentioned you guys are in Texas, New Mexico, and Oregon on top of California. I imagine you're looking to grow. I imagine that would include other states. Now, look, I love California, but, you know, the rest of us come in the U.S., we, you know, California, you guys have some certain preferences there for certain things that the rest of the country doesn't always share, right? How do you take into account as you grow what might work in California, might not work in Ohio, where I am? And also from a franchising perspective, you obviously have to have some consistency and things like that. Susan, what is your approach?
As I mentioned earlier, I've been in this space for 30 years. I open restaurants all over the country. I know that there are regional favorites. There's things that, you know, that play really well in Phoenix that may not play as well in, you know, Denver or in Atlanta. But I think you know, the consumer today across the country has become much more sophisticated. I think more aware of what's out there, certainly with social media and TikTok and everything. I think the younger generation now is being exposed to a lot of different flavors and different trends that maybe I wouldn't have known about when I was in high school or even 20 years ago. So, you know, I do think that things happen, you know, in California with some trends at times before they hit the rest of the country, but everything that we do plays very well within the markets that we're in. You know, when we look at, you know, expanding, you know, we want to make sure that we understand what's happening within those local markets as well, too. I mean, I think there's a lot of things sometimes that happen. You know, Texas, for example, we have a location in Houston. Houston is a great food city, and a lot of global trends there that are applicable to other parts of the country, too. So I think people are more sophisticated now in what's out there and are interested in trying that, too. So,
yeah. Noah, what do you do to account for this? I mean, as you expand into Texas, for example, do you travel to Texas and like go eat your way around Texas and look for some of those flavors? What's your process like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we first opened that store in Houston, I actually did a trip to Houston, College Station in Dallas. And once again, it's keeping that pulse on the market, you know, and talking with the business owner out there. What are your guests asking for? What do you like? I mean, you're the one in this market, and let me see what I can do to accommodate that. But yeah, I think it's just going out to the market is always the key thing, is what's on menus out there that aren't on menus here, and then seeing what I can do with my pantry and my suppliers to accommodate that. But yeah, I think it's keeping your pulse on that local market is crucial.
You mentioned a couple of times this notion of listening to the customer and what does the customer want, and right. you guys must have some pretty hard data, especially with the technology available today, to look and see what customers are ordering, certainly, but then gathering information on what they want. Noah, how do you do that? Unpack that a little bit more for me, the process of, you know, listening to the customer, trying out what the customer wants, and actually, you know, actually activating some of these things that they might want when, you know, they're not a trained chef like you might be. How do you do that? How do you take that into account?
So first, we leverage our loyalty program. So we'll send out surveys, different, now they're doing LTOs. So leveraging our loyalty program, reaching out to them, talking to our other customer, our franchisees, what are they seeing? What are their customers asking them? And then we have a pretty robust pipeline. So we test a year out. So we have 8 test locations in our different markets in Southern California. So we're going to test 5 to 6 different concepts a year prior. So right now we're testing 5 concepts for consideration for Q1 in 2025. And so looking at that data too is, you know, being a year ahead, and then taking a look at that data throughout the year too, is, you know, did that change, and reaching out to our customers like, hey, you know, we tried, right now we're testing with the IQF avocado. Do you guys want to see avocado? Maybe 6 months ago, you weren't too interested, but are you interested in avocado smoothie now? And it might've changed within 6 months because there might've been some celebrity or some TikTok fad or something that happened that wasn't around 6 months ago. So constantly keeping a pulse on our consumer. And like I said, leveraging our loyalty app, because those are our customers that are in our store every day, and listening to them. And like I said, our franchisees as well.
I get a sense that that's got to be so hard today because things move so quickly and they're speeding up because of TikTok, because of Instagram influencers, that today's trend, you know, is going to be gone in a week and suddenly they're onto something else and you're working a year ahead. How do you then, I guess, how do you stir up that excitement, even if you're maybe late to the party, let's say, even though right. It's for every restaurant company, that's pretty much right on time. But how do you then drive that excitement, make sure they're still excited about it, make sure they're still coming in to try that product?
You know, I think as Noah said, I mean, we do leverage our loyalty program, asking, you know, a lot of times the products that we're testing, anybody that orders that, we'll send them a survey afterwards to ask them if they liked it, if that's something that they would purchase in the future. You know, I think it's interesting because some of the things that we've tested, I think, are just now hitting. Sometimes we're a little too early to the game. And, you know, I love ube. Ube is huge in, you know, parts of Southern California. We tried a new base smoothie as an innovation item. Was it 2 years ago or a year ago, Noah? A year ago.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It did okay, but I don't think people understood. You go into a Trader Joe's 6 months later and they have a whole in cap that's nothing but ube. So, you know, some of the things that we test are things that sometimes we're a little too early to the game, but we have it in our back pocket that it may not make it to that next year, you know, first quarter pipeline, but it could be in 2 years, right? So, you know, I don't think we've had anything. And we try not to focus on like a trend. We try to focus on, you know, ingredients or things that we think folks are going to want, you know, going forward. Right. So not so much, you know, the avocado, I think, has become much more now. People are starting to think about, you know, the healthy fats and how they have that beyond, you know, guacamole and, you know, starting to look at, you know, different ways to be able to incorporate that. So is it something that I think right now may sell in Ohio? Maybe not, but, you know, 3 years from now, maybe something that's on everybody's menu. So.
Absolutely. Well, it's an interesting consideration for you guys must be then, of course, the nutrition, because so many people turning to juice it up to be a part of what would be a healthier lifestyle. I guess, Noah, this is more of a question for you is, you know, how do you factor that in when you're developing a new product? How important is that nutritional component? And, you know, we've seen so much fracturing of the nutrition diet, whatever you want to call it, segment. And, you know, you suddenly got, you know, the protein stuff over here and you've got, I don't know, all the various diets, right? How do you factor all of that into your game plan for R&D?
Yeah, I mean, half of R&D is what the work you do on paper. So I'm the one that developed all of the nutritional information for our brand. So I'll do a recipe on paper. First thing is, you know, is the concept what we want? Then I'll plug in the nutritionals and it's like, oh, boom, this is an excellent source of vitamin A, vitamin B, zinc. You know, during COVID, it was, you know, what's an excellent source of vitamin C? We leveraged Osserol, cherry, then, you know, zinc, magnesium, all those things that support a healthy immune system. So hitting those checks in the R&D process, even before I start benchtop testing, So I already know going into, you know, making my different concepts that these check all the boxes that we're looking for. So same thing with like our plant-based smoothies. You know, we're looking for, at the time, people were really wanted fiber rich, right? And so it was, okay, how can I get incorporate raw fruits and veggies that will give you your daily allowance of fiber so that you feel full, you know, and it's a 190 calorie smoothie, but it feels like you ate a full meal. So even before I go into the kitchen, I've already checked off the boxes on what the nutritional, I guess you could say USPs that we're trying to hit, meet those criteria.
Sure. Revisiting the conversation around supply. You know, I remember back in the pandemic, of course, everything went topsy-turvy with supply chain, especially. But I remember especially with restaurants that were trying to source fruit and vegetables, it became very tricky because of the borders being closed and you couldn't, you know, import certain things, and that got very difficult. I'm sure all of that's figured out, but there's still, you know, certain issues with supply chain today. Noah, tell me about, you know, how what supply looks like now, how that's been changing over the last couple of years, maybe some headwinds you might still face in the supply chain department.
It's a lot better than it was 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, it was like, okay, let's just incorporate. I got to be creative with our own pantry list. Our suppliers are already challenged enough as it is just to get us our, you know, IQF pineapple, or packaging was a really big thing too. So that was just incorporating in my pantry. And now it's just working with my current suppliers on, hey, what new SKUs? The good thing about us is a lot of our fruits and veggies are frozen. So they're harvesting now and they're going to have supply for the next 12 months. So it's working with our suppliers. Hey, what do you have that we won't have to worry about 12 to 24 months from now, and working with them on that innovation. And it's definitely opened up now. I think the playbook's wide open now. I don't really foresee too much supply chain issues, at least for our brand. Compared to 4 years ago, it's a completely different game.
Yeah. Does supply chain limit your creativity though still? Because I imagine if you want to incorporate some unique Southeast Asian fruit, you can't do it unless there's going to be enough supply in a year, right, to get it out to all the stores.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is, you know, going out to food shows, one of the first things I'll ask, you know, a potential supplier is what's your distribution look like? And if they're not within our network, it's like, hey, until you get into one of our distributor networks, like, we just don't have the bandwidth to, you know, help you through that process. So you have to be selective. You know, before it was, you know, back in 2013, 2012, when I first started, it was, yeah, I'll make something work. Let's pick and choose whatever. But now it's, like I said, it's the first question I ask potential suppliers, what's your supply chain look like? And if it's not solid, I'm sorry. I will revisit each other when you have that nailed down. But
yeah. All right. So Susan, turning our attention to growth and expansion for Juice It Up. You know, as we said, you have an eye on expansion. You're a franchise, all on the western half of the U.S., let's call it. There is a robust competition out there today, as you know very well. There's this category has a lot of players, although far, far from saturation, as I'm sure you also believe. But tell me about the growth strategy. How do you bring Juice It Up to new markets, into new communities? What's the messaging? How do you position Juice It Up as the leader of the category?
So it's a great question. You know, in my prior experience, you know, with opening across the country, you know, one of the things that's really key is identifying the markets that you want to go into and then how you're going to be able to support those new markets, right? So rather than trying to go across the country in the next 2 years, you know, we're very methodical about the states surrounding us that we want to be able to enter and making sure that we have distribution, right? That I have, you know, operational support to be able to support the folks that go into that market, be really, you know, methodical about, you know, how we, you know, who our competitors are in that market, how we would position ourselves. And then finding the right kind of the right folks to be able to partner with to be able to move into those areas. You know, I mean, we're We're a 99% franchise. We have one corporate location here in Costa Mesa, but the rest of our locations are owned and operated by franchise owners. And so, you know, a lot of what we really focus on, especially as we look at the areas that we're targeting for growth in the next 2 years, is, you know, finding people that are actively, you know, an active engaged owner for the business and for the community. Because we really know, you know, 29 years in this business, we have franchisees that have been with us for over 20 years. We know our most successful franchisees are those that are actively involved in their business and their community. And you know, that's what we really look for when we're looking about expansion. It's not about how many agreements can I sign and, you know, just everywhere. It's entering a partnership with somebody. So we want to make sure that we have the right partner as we enter markets and that we're going to be able to support them as well too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, last question for both of you guys. And I'm going to start, Noah, with you. What are you excited about as far as menu R&D goes for Juice It Up and more broadly? You can talk broadly about the restaurant industry, because as a food guy, I'm sure you're just watching the whole industry and the flavors and trends out there. But specific to your role, what's something you're really excited about for the future?
I'm excited about a lot of the flavors I grew up with are now becoming mainstream. So it's like, you know, okay, now it's, you know, lean on my, you know, experience from growing up back home is, you know, things like lychee, guava, those type of things that I grew up with as a staple. Ube, to what she was speaking to earlier, are now becoming more and more mainstream. So I'm really excited to leverage my experience prior to becoming a food science.
What are you excited about for the future of Juice It Up?
For Juice It Up, I think it's continuing to expand the brand, continuing to see folks grow their business. You know, we've had five years have been challenging, but through it, we've had franchisees that have grown their business. So it's continuing to be a partnership with folks to help them own their own business and help us grow the brand.
Sure. All right, Susan Taylor and Noah Burgess of Juice It Up. Guys, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Juice It Up's Susan Taylor and Noah Burgess. So what should you learn from this interview? Here are my 5 takeaways. My first takeaway is that there is a time and a place for outside-the-box menu innovation. What I mean by that is, you know, specifically time and place. And when I say time, you know, I mean that your customers need to have some familiarity with your ingredients probably before you put it on your menu. There is a such thing as being too early to a trend. Of course, there's such a thing as being too late to a trend. You have to get the timing of your menu innovation just right so that customers are interested, they try the ingredient, and you know, they're not scared away because there's no familiarity. In other words, you maybe want to be on the leading edge, but not the bleeding edge when it comes to the menu innovation with certain ingredients, especially if you're a QSR or a fast casual with a lot of mainstream appeal. Because you have mainstream appeal, there might be, you know, not as many adventurous customers, or maybe there's a little bit of a hesitation to be trying ingredients that there's not that familiarity with. You've got to get that timing right. Look at trends. Look at the timing of things. If there's an ingredient that's kind of bubbling up around the industry, you know, you have some certainty that your guests will probably be interested and may even really like it. But don't add something just for the sake of adding something that's completely outside the box. Make sure you're paying attention to the timing of it. When I say place, of course, I'm referring to geographies. If you look around the country, our country is beautifully diverse when it comes to tastes and palates. But, you know, for example, in Southern California, where Juice It Up is based, there's going to be a different interest in certain ingredients than I might have here in the Midwest, or maybe others have in the South or up in New England. We are all different with our tastes, and you have to consider that, particularly if you have locations in different geographies. You know, you don't want to roll out something across the system that's going to resonate in Southern California, but not the Midwest. Now, the good news is, and I'll get to this in a little bit, is that something like a TikTok is a great equalizer in this, in that if there's a trend on social media, there, you know, that supersedes geography, right? Like that goes across all regions and states and even the entire world generally. And so that can lead to some interest that is more universal. But consider the geography of where you're rolling out menu items, and consider the timing of how you're rolling out these menu items, because You've got to get those right in order for your menu innovations to succeed. My second takeaway is that you should watch other categories for innovation opportunities. If you're a QSR or fast casual, look to full service. If you're a casual dining concept, maybe you're looking at fine dining. Noah made this great comment that he watches cocktail bars for innovation. I think that's really smart for example, for a concept like Juice It Up, which is using a lot of fruits and vegetables. So are bartenders at cocktail bars, and they might be exploring more trendy options. Look across the category lines and see what's going on with menu innovation at other concepts and other categories, because it's safe to say that, you know, if something's happening at the fine dining level, it might trickle down to casual, then it will trickle down to fast casual, then it will trickle down to QSR. If you look over at cocktail bars, even if you look at something like the supermarkets or non-commercial food service, where trends bubble up, you know, if a trend bubbles up in a certain category, there's a good chance that it will resonate within your own category. So that almost gives you permission to play around with that ingredient as well on your own menu. My third takeaway is that customers and franchisees are equally impacted by the innovations on your menu. So when you are developing new menu items, when you are rolling things out to the menu, of course, your first thought is, this is for the guest. They are interested in this. This is going to drive traffic. It's going to be appealing. They're going to want to come try it and order it and eat it. We're going to make sales off of this, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, that's the whole reason for being in the restaurant industry. But if you're a franchise concept, Juice It Up has all but one of its locations are franchises, you have to consider, is this a profitable menu item? What are the procedures for, you know, sourcing this menu item and processing it and, you know, preparing it? And is your team going to be able to easily serve this menu item? You have to consider all those things. You can't just say, does the guest want it? Then sure, here you go. You have to consider both the guests and the franchisees in your menu R&D, because if it's not a profitable menu item, if it's really hard to serve, if your team doesn't understand it, then chances are, even if your customers love it, it's going to fail. My fourth takeaway, as I hinted at earlier, TikTok is introducing the world to new foods and flavors. Same goes for Instagram, same goes for all kinds of social media. This has been true for a while, but I think especially with the rise of TikTok, it's interesting to see how certain trends bubble up on TikTok and kind of spill over into the real world. Susan pointed that out, that, you know, when you're looking at new flavors, especially if you're exploring new geographies, new countries, if you want to find some new flavors, go to TikTok and see what they're talking about across the various food channels on TikTok, because they might, if there's something that's getting a lot of traction on TikTok, again, it's going to bubble over into the real world. And, you know, you've got, again, that permission that you can try something on your menu if consumers on TikTok are really interested in it. My fifth and final takeaway is that your most loyal customers are a perfect focus group. So Noah was talking about in his R&D process, how they find ideas for new menu items. One of the sources they go to is their loyalty members, right? So if you have loyalty members who are regular visitors to your concept, they're very invested in your new menu items. So it's a great idea to tap into those folks and say, what do you think about this menu item? Would you order it regularly? Do you suggest we explore this further? Do you think we should make it a permanent menu item? They're going to be your best guests to weigh in on whether or not something might work for your menu. So if you have a loyalty program, if you've got a way to communicate with them, well, for starters, if you don't, you should explore those things, right? But once you have that in place, then start to use your loyalty members as a focus group. Offer them free food. Just say, hey, thanks for being a focus or thanks for being a loyalty member. Here's a free new product. We're trying this out. We'd really be interested in your feedback on it. You're going to get some really valuable feedback from that customer. I guarantee it. Those are all my takeaways for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe to Takeaway wherever you listen to podcasts and leave your feedback. You can also email me at sam.okus@informa.com. Thanks again and talk to you next week.